Good evening. Our city council and the successor agency have just returned from two closed sessions, one for each agency, and I will ask our city attorney to see if there's anything to report.
Actually, there were four closed sessions, three on the council and then one for the successor agency, and the answer to your question is that there was no reportable action.
Very good. And we concluded all of the closed session business, so there will not be a need to go back to closed session.
That is correct.
Thank you. So with that, I will call our city council meeting to order. We'll begin with a pledge of allegiance by Councilman Burbeau.
Please join me in saluting the nation's flag. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States.
Thank you. First item, roll call, please.
Councilmember Burbeau?
Here.
Councilmember Moreno?
Here.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Here.
And Mayor O'Malley?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Next item is the approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Sturtevant, seconded by Councilwoman and Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. And as in our notes say, we are waiving the reading of full of all ordinances appearing on the agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the city council votes. So with that motion, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
All right.
Okay to do a voice vote on that one? City clerk says
that's
gonna,
okay. Yeah.
She's going to let us do it this time. Well, you know, it's summer. We can be abbreviated. We have no presentations. First on the agenda is the consent calendar. We have items that are considered usually routine and don't require a lot of discussion unless any member of the public or a member of the council would like to pull an item for further discussion. Any council member wishing to pull an item?
Yeah.
And I will disclose that I will not be voting on item 4 on the consent calendar. It has to do with setting an annual assessment for the lodging industry. And since I am a proprietor of Portola Inn, I would not be allowed to vote on the assessment on that item. So I may vote on the consent calendar as a total, but abstaining from that. Are there any other abstentions?
Yes, Mayor. I have to abstain from voting on number 7 since I work for Pacific Gas and Electric, so I will vote on 1 through 6, but I'll abstain on 7.
Thank you. Any member of the public wishing to pull any consent calendar item? Seeing none, I'd entertain a motion on the entire consent calendar with the exceptions noted.
Move approval with exceptions as noted.
We have a motion by Councilman Moreno, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Burbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Next item is updates from the city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. As usual, we had a busy last couple of weekends since our last meeting, and I'd like to tell you about a few of the events that were going on around town. So the Mother's Day Cookie Adventure at the Charles Paddock Zoo was last Sunday, Mother's Day. Local cookie lovers visited the Charles Paddock Zoo for a special Mother's Day treat. Our guests were able to learn about the zoo and the animals that live there, all while enjoying complimentary cookies courtesy of some of our terrific Central Coast bakers. We were very pleased with zoo attendance numbers for Cookie Adventure this year, which was almost up by 70% over last year. And it was a beautiful day. I think some of our zookeepers were a little bit disappointed that there weren't quite as many cookies left over, but there were plenty for all that attended. There was a countywide Peace Officers Memorial on Thursday, May 18th, and this was part of National Police Week. The local law enforcement community and members of the public gathered at Mission Plaza in San Luis Obispo. The ceremony featured an honor roll for the 11 California officers killed in the line of duty through the past year. The event included a caravan of law enforcement vehicles to the plaza, and this annual event was organized by the San Luis Obispo County Criminal Justice Administrators Association. It's a nice event. We've held it here at the police, at the Veterans Memorial at different times, and it's a very moving event. In the Sunken Gardens, if you drove by and wondered what was going on, it was Relay for Life this last weekend. So the annual American Cancer Society Relay for Life event was held at the Sunken Gardens. The fundraised through the Relay for Life of Atascadero helps American Cancer Society save lives and helps to fund ongoing research, education, and prevention efforts. The event featured activities for everyone, including craft and food booths, kids camps, karaoke, informational tents, and much more. This year's event featured quite a few teams from all over town, including the police department's arresting cancer team. It's a neat event. I heard from quite a few people who drove by in the evening, and they have the candles lit around the Sunken Gardens. Actually, I think they're electronic candles lit around the Sunken Gardens, but it's a beautiful event. Lake Fest, yes, that is our council member, Charles Borbeau, on the Rotary Cardboard Boat. So the second annual Lake Fest event was held last Saturday by the Friends of Atascadero Lake, and it was amazing. The music was great, and the food was delicious. The event was bigger and better than last year, and there was quite a bit more boat making and on-the-water activity. The cardboard boat competition was a lot of fun, and I'm very proud to say, as a Rotarian, that Rotary's boat was the grand prize winner. The boat was paddled by Charles Borbeau and Rich Johnson with John Neal as the captain of the boat. And Mayor, I'm sorry to say we had to go out and rescue the Kiwanian boat. Albert, the Kiwanian that was paddling that boat, it fell apart about a third of the way through, and he had to swim for the rest of the bay. But we look forward to a lot of competition. This was an open cardboard boat race for any group or individual that wanted to make a cardboard and duct tape boat. We're welcome to build some. We look forward to more entries next year. Solarponics did an amazing boat there with the pirate theme and did a good job. Heather has a question.
I just want to say there were about a dozen kids in the afternoon that made boats and did a pretty good job. There were a handful of them that got around and back and didn't sink, and it was a lot of fun. They had at least twice as many kids as last year, and like you said, I mean, there's probably 10 times the number of people there watching and cheering them on. It was great.
It was warm, but there was a lot of people there, and it was a fun event. The Friends of the Lake did a really nice job on this, put a lot of time and effort into it. Another event going on at the same time was the Grid Alternative Central Coast Solarthon event. Grid Alternative Central Coast recently installed solar panels on 6 of the People's Self-Help Housing Homes on the Atascadero Triangle during their Solarthon event. Solarthon is a solar installation block party and fundraiser where volunteers come together to install solar for a community that really needs it. Participants get to have hands-on experience installing solar for local families, all while having fun and making a difference in their community. Through this event, Grid Alternatives, together with their generous sponsor partners, provided 6 Atascadero families with clean, renewable energy. I know both the mayor and Councilmember Moreno attended the event. Both had a lot of praise for it, especially installing on these particular homes was going to mean a lot. I don't know if you want to offer anything else on that, Mayor.
We will when you conclude your report.
Tonight, you'll notice that our police chief is not here. He is at the Tip-A-Cop dinner in Paso Robles. It is a Special Olympics fundraiser. And this week, local law enforcement officers are trading in their badges for aprons to spend the next few evenings serving dinner at the Tippecanoe fundraisers to raise money for Special Olympics in San Luis Obispo County. 100% of the proceeds raised at the dinners will benefit our local Special Olympics athletes. Tables of eight cost $200. There's some events on May 20th at Madonna Expo Center, May 21st at South County Regional Center, and June 4th at the Cambria Veterans Memorial Building. Please, if you were unable to attend tonight, there's lots of opportunities to help with this great fundraiser. And coming up on June 7th at the Farmers Market, we're going to have Community Night. So the first Farmers Market of June on Wednesday, June 7th, will be Community Night. The entertainment lineup is still in progress, but we know that beginning at 3 p.m., we have the Atascadero High School Drumline and Jazz Band. The Atascadero High School World Champion Robotics Team, the Graybots, will be bringing their robot to the front steps of City Hall and doing a demonstration. We'll have the mascot and cheer team from the high school, the Atascadero Middle School Marching Band, and Motion Academy of Dance. So if you haven't had a chance to make it out to our farmers market here on Wednesday night, please do so when June 7th is a great day to be there and get a lot of great entertainment and see how well our kids at the high school are doing. With that, I'd like to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Any council questions? I would add on the day started off with the Relay for Life, and it's noteworthy that this is with their ninth in our city, and next year is going to be the 10th. I talked with the Daners, who are part of the leadership of our local group, that have done a fantastic job with this, but we should really take it up a notch or two, and I think we could take a look at that. Just in Atascadero's event, we've raised over $500,000 in the years that they've done that, just for increasing education and also looking for cures. So it's been a great program. Grid Alternatives, this is, I believe, the first time they've partnered with People's Self-Help Housing, where every house received solar energy. And this is basically the cost of the materials are worked into the cost of the home, and that's amortized out. But it's substantially reduced because, just like the housing, it's all done with People's Self-Help. It's truly learning to build your own home. What a way to grow up as a family. I remember having that as myself growing up in Atascadero, building the home I grew up in with my dad, and lifetime shaping your thinking. So great experience for those families. And as hearing from some of the parents, they noted that each family is saving about $30,000 a year just off their electric over a few years. Maybe my bill might be that high, but it was more over the life, 20 years or so of these homes. That would be $30,000, and like one mom said, they're planning on setting that aside for a college fund for their kids. So that's just a very nice thing in our community. And I commended the community, as Councilwoman Moreno and I have both attended, I think, every People's Self-Help Housing event there's been. We commended them not only for their own sweat equity building their own homes, but, you know, our community was eligible for some park grants because we achieved a very high rate, I think one of the highest in the county, of actually building lower cost housing. And so by their sweat equity, not only did they get their own homes, they contributed to our city's ability to go after some grant money that we look like we're very likely to get. So they are truly part of our community in this project. And I think you had a comment as well, Councilwoman Fonzi?
On a slightly different topic,
yes.
I had the honor of representing the city at the Peace Officers Memorial ceremony that was held at the Mission Plaza. It was incredibly moving. It was a time, and we're near Memorial Day, too, to remember those who have given and sacrificed for us to keep us safe, not only our peace officers, but also our armed forces and others. But our police chief represented us very well, spoke at the memorial ceremony, and it was well attended.
Thank you. Well, there's just a lot going on in our community. We've got a great community, even if Rotary beats Kiwanis now and then. I'll just let that one go.
To be fair, we had some of the best engineers in Atascadero working on this, and about $75 worth of duct tape.
Well, probably Albert was all tuckered out, because basically Kiwanis provided a free breakfast to anyone that came to the Relay for Life earlier that day, so that's probably his excuse. Thank you. We'll move on with the agenda. Next item is community forum, which is an opportunity for any of you to speak to all of us about any topic that's not on the agenda but is under our jurisdiction. So please come forward. You've got a whole 3 minutes each, and we will listen. Welcome. Let me see. We'll start the clock over. I want to make sure the mic is on for you. If you just state your name for the record is all we ask.
My name's Colleen Annis. I'm a resident of but not representing the Las Lomas District, and I have concerns about the management of that district. I found the city had overpaid the landscape contractor by 31%. Rather than recoup the overpayment and hold him to his bid for the second year of the contract, the city decided to let him keep the $11,000 overpayment and rebid. You're asking for $64,000 to pay landscape, utility, and admin costs of $53,000 when there's already a balance of $180,000 in our account. In our streets assessment, you're asking us to contribute now not only towards maintenance, repair, and admin costs, but also towards two milling and resurfacing projects 20 and 40 years from now at $758,000 each, and rebuilding the roads and sidewalks 60 years from now at $2.5 million, a total of more than $4 million. Aside from how unreasonable this seems at face value, it's in direct conflict with the 2005 survey that established our district. Finally, your engineer's report does not justify the 25 to 50% discount given to multifamily homes. It states single-family homes should pay more for roads and landscaping because they produce more wastewater. First, wastewater has nothing to do with roads or landscaping. Second, with three full baths for the townhomes and two for the apartments, they produce as much or more wastewater as the single-family homes. With more bedrooms and bathtubs, the multifamily homes are more likely to have children and make more car trips. The multifamily homes, despite having the same amount of parking as the single-family ones, have run out of parking in their areas and park on the streets in the single-family home area, a clear indication they use the roads as much or more. Having more children, yet no yards, they're much more likely to use the park and trails, which are located closer to the multifamily homes, as is more than 80% of our landscaping. It's obvious the multifamily homes derive as much or more benefit from the roads and landscaping, yet pay half as much for them. I urge the city to use better fiscal judgment in reviewing and granting contracts with our district's money, to bring street assessments into line with the parameters established with the district in 2005, and to assess parcels with equal benefits equally. Thank you.
Thank you. And we will hold all questions to the end of the public comment. We'll ask staff to address them to the best of the ability, and some may require some homework and follow-up. But thank you. It's been a long time since I've heard anyone cram so many points in 3 minutes. You were very articulate, thought that through. Makes it easier for staff to respond when you have such clear questions to follow up on. So thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
My name is Karen McNamara, and I'm here representing the Atascadero Printery Foundation with some of our other members. And we've come tonight to publicly announce to the City Council and staff that we have proudly completed the first phase of our mission to reclaim the Atascadero Printery building for the community. With the encouragement of San Luis Obispo County, we were the successful bidders at the tax auction last week and purchased the property on Thursday, May 19th. We look forward to starting the second and third phases of the repurposing and restoration of the building. And to make that for community use, our goal is to inspire and unite the entire community to support bringing life and light back to the printery building. It once was a lifeblood of Atascadero, and we believe it can be a big part of that again. Recent studies have shown there's a strong relationship between restoring historic buildings and the advancement of the economy in the area. So we're happy to be a part of that. Adding a large performing arts center, which is our goal, will bring much added, much needed nightlife and a community activity to Atascadero, which will be a huge economic boost as well. So we're positively looking forward to adding another finished building to the historic district and adding activities to the art district. We appreciate any and all community support and welcome open discussion with members of City Council, staff, however it's going to come about. We know this is going to be a long process, but we're really looking forward to coordination, cooperation, and support from the city. And we just wanted to say thank you for everything so far. And here we go.
Thank you. Well, your smile says it all. It was very exciting. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening. Thank you. Before I read my statement, I just have a quick question.
Well, you have your...
My name is Dan Feldman. I have a quick question about when the Three Bridges Trails is going to open up. The publication said in summer, and maybe you can address that later, because summer is like 3 months long, and I'm really anxious to get out there. Good evening. I am a member of Atheists United SLO, a local group of over 550 members dedicated to public service, advocacy, and education. A few weeks ago, over 1,000 people participated in the March for Science in San Luis Obispo. They did this to acknowledge the paramount importance of science and of scientists to our community and to the world. The scientific method is the greatest invention ever devised by human beings. It has its limitations and pitfalls, but it is by far the best tool we have to determine what's probably true and what's probably not. Compared to any other way of knowing, it is more reliable, productive, and self-correcting. Think of any challenge facing our community today, protecting our natural environment, improving public health, providing adequate housing, developing the local economy, and reducing crime. The best possible answer to all of these questions come from the systematic collection and careful evaluation of all the relevant evidence. In other words, they come from the scientific method. Atheists United calls upon this council to support science and those who practice it in our community. This includes funding science education, both in and out of school, encouraging science-based businesses and jobs, and applying the scientific method in your own decision-making. The city of Atascadero will be better for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome. Next speaker.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, and staff. I'm Jim Wilkins with the Historical Society. I wanted to let the community out there viewing and listening know about our fundraiser we're having on June 3rd for the Colony Heritage Center. And we are also in the same business as them as restoring buildings. We're moving ours. It's going to be out at Cass Winery, June 3rd. It's going to be a Cass catered dinner. Tickets are at chamber office, and we need a head count by Friday, but we're going to have tickets afterwards, so if you want to go, there'll still be some tickets. If you want to help restorate some buildings and don't want to get your hands dirty unless you don't use a fork at dinner, come on down and have dinner with us. Thank you.
Thank you. We thank both organizations for their historic restoration efforts. Any other speakers? Seeing no one approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back to the council. And we do have a number of questions that could be responded to. The one lady may have had more detailed questions that you may have responded to in the past, but that might require more of a written response and that it's very specific and I think is worthy of being addressed. But would you like to respond to your best of ability at this time? On the questions raised.
Yes. Let me go ahead and respond to a few. We have been meeting with Dr. Annis and another member of Los Lomas that lives there, Ms. Lemoyne. I think we've had two meetings, and we are set to have another internal staff meeting tomorrow. We did, Dr. Annis did find a error in the bid sheets for Madrone Landscaping. We did look at those and confirm that, yes, there was an error in those bid sheets. We are currently working through with Madrone to try and resolve that issue, whether that is them refunding us money or providing services in the future or some other method. In looking back through all of the bid sheets, there was a misunderstanding on most of them. So we are looking at perhaps going out to bid in the future, near future, to redo it again, get everybody a fair playing field. Madrone Landscape was the second contractor. We did have somebody else that did win the bid. They failed to perform to standards. We let them go and hired Madrone. So we will start again. She does refer to also that the fact that multifamily does not pay the same share as a single family. And there's a sliding scale depending on the district there. This was adopted when the district was first formed. We didn't quite know what the product would be there, what the multifamily would look like.
What year was that, by the way?
2005, I believe. At that point, it was this area here is multifamily. It is standard for apartments and multifamily to pay, have a lesser impact on things like roads and other things. There's a lot of studies that do back that up. The engineers say this is standard and common. It's been defendable in court. That being said, there is a method to change that. What it would take is that it would have to be a study performed by the district to look and see, is there a justifiable rationale to have them pay something other than what's kind of the standard throughout the country. If there is, that would then go to a vote of the property owners, and that vote would be based on their proportionate share of the taxes. We did present that option to Dr. Annis and Ms. LeMoyne, and they let us know. They said they would let us know if they wished to pursue it. The last point that she had was in regards to roads. We have historically said that we want to have roads maintained forever. So we want to have enough money in there to continually do it, continually keep them up to date. You can't always do slurry seals and have the road maintained. You do have to do some mills. You have to do some overlays. You have to do some of those things. We do have a road program for that. They did recently point out some language that says, hey, this money won't be used for major resurfacing. Those major resurfacing still need to be done. They need to be done by the residents and not the city. So it just shifts the funding mechanism. We're having a meeting tomorrow. One of the things that they did propose was doing a 24-year road program instead of the 60-year road program. We're going to be looking at that tomorrow and discussing that. So we are working with them to try and resolve those. The bottom line is the residents will have to maintain the road in some form or another, and we'll work through those and keep the council posted.
Thank you. And there was some question about, from the one gentleman had a question about...
Three Bridge Trail opening. Hopefully Nick can help me out with that one.
Well, some people think there's already been a soft opening of that project, but I believe it's going to be coming up here in the next, in June sometime, so look for that to be advertised and posted shortly.
Thank you. Well, I do want to just mention again on the historic restoration in town. I think one of the proudest moments I had in my life was standing on the front steps of City Hall when we did our grand reopening in our centennial year. And to think that we basically created this building, recreated it, when many thought it was going to be too expensive, you shouldn't even try, bulldoze it down. We went through council meetings with that discussion. Yeah, we spent $30 million all on historic restoration grants, not one dime from our local community, and then to have it later appraised at $200 million, and then, but I can just remember the wave of not only enthusiasm but pride in our community when we all came out for that. So, as you say, when you restore a piece of history that has so much meaning in a community, it has a long-lasting effect. And I wish Mr. Wilkins was still here from the Historical Society, but I think your Prinery Foundation, Historical Society, these organizations don't get enough credit for the value that brings in our community. And, of course, I can speak as also representing our Tourism Business Improvement District Board. We see the value of that in historic tourism, too. It's a foundation. So I think you've touched on everything: arts, history, tourism. You've done it all. So we wish you the best of luck. We'll certainly do what we can to help. I think that concludes our public comment and our community forum. So thank you for coming out this evening. And we shall move on to our first public hearings. B1, amendments to city services fee schedule. And it does request ex parte communications, which I know we all know up here what ex parte means. I always like to repeat that it means we disclose to the public if we've had any conversations outside of this public process that may influence our decisions. I haven't had any on this topic for many years. Anyone else have any ex parte to disclose? So this is pretty much all coming back to us just from staff input. So I'll turn it over to Ms. Jerry Rangel for a presentation.
Thank you very much, Mayor and Council. As you said, tonight we are just reviewing the fee schedule. This is our annual update as we've been kind of going on since 2014. Here we go. Technical difficulties. So these service fees represent cost recovery. So the city provides certain services to the community for which we are looking to maintain cost recovery in order to just not burden the other taxpayers. So these are on sometimes optional services, permits, and recreational items and things like that. The fees are calculated based on the cost of the service. And we did a big study back in 2014, if you'll recall, to determine what the cost was to the city to provide these services. Based on that information, we came to you with a schedule, and some of those historically have been subsidized, tax subsidized, like the recreation services, and some of them have been 100% taxpayer subsidized, more like the development services and building permits, those types of items. It's the city's policy to adjust these by CPI annually, and the CPI adjustment is 2.49%. So most of the fees in the schedule were updated by that amount. Some are regulated by the state level, so they weren't adjusted. And there are certain fees in recreation and things like that that were held flat just due to kind of demand and what the community really is looking for in those. We did also, on council advice, review the weed abatement administration fee. As you'll recall, a couple of months ago, I think we talked about that and if that fee was appropriate. We did talk to our cost consultant on that. He thought that that was an appropriate fee to do 150% of the cost. There is additional information in the staff report, and I'm certainly be happy to answer any questions on that. If these fees are adopted tonight, they'll take effect in 60 days. And with that, I will answer any questions you have.
Thank you. Any council questions?
Yes.
Councilmember Brabeau.
And that's so much, initially not so much of a question, but a clarification, because I've had people before wonder where the city gets its CPI number from. You know, people who are on Social Security and got like 0.3% increase this year, they wonder, where do we come up with a 2.49% CPI? And my understanding is we're using a more localized, either a San Francisco or an L.A. CPI, because there are multiple CPIs around the country. Can you identify which CPI we're using?
I believe it was a California-based CPI from the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Got it. Okay. I just want to clarify, because like I said, the nationwide CPI was well below 1%, and so people are going, wait, you know, I didn't see that CPI number. I'd like to know where it came from. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And I don't know if this is the I had a number of individual questions on individual fees that I discussed with the city manager in our weekly meeting, so I didn't need to go over all of them. I did have a couple of concerns that I wanted to address, or would like to remind the council that we should address at some point in
well,
the future.
Well, I would remind if
that's
the
not a
council,
question,
yeah, well, this is questions at this point. We'll hear from the public, and then we can get into some deliberation. So if there are any questions of a staff's report or clarifying questions, this would be the time for council. And go ahead, Councilman Moreno.
Director, I don't know if I misheard you. You said sometimes we have like a 70% where we, you know, the taxpayers subsidize the rest, like, you know, for some of the recreation types of things. And then you said others are 100% subsidized. Did you mean 100% captured?
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
That's what I thought. I wanted to make sure that I hadn't missed something. Okay.
Sorry
thank
about
you.
That.
That's all right.
Other council questions?
So there is a portion of our report that talks about whether we want to go with a flat fee or to go per parcel based on the actual use. Is that something that you're just looking for direction? This is discussion. I know we will do that later. But what is it that you're looking for from the council?
Well, I know that the council had concerns on whether that was an appropriate fee for weed abatement. As it's presented to council currently, it is at the 150% fee. I believe that that's probably on a size scale, maybe more effective than a flat fee, because some of the charged parcels are under $100. And if you did a flat fee, you may be over that. The flat fee might be over that. So by a substantial amount. So depending on where the council chose to put a flat fee or a sliding scale or something like that, that could potentially have that issue there. And the other thing would be it would be a policy decision on where that level was set on whether the council wanted to recoup 100% of the fees or not. So that's another thing to discuss. But as it's listed in your fee schedules, it's the same at 150%.
Thank you.
Well, I remember a long time ago when I first came on council, the whole discussion of full cost recovery of costs associated with providing services was discussed. And as I recall, first of all, the city cannot make a profit, correct? What the city can do is choose to either subsidize the services with other sources of revenue, if it has any, or it can assign the costs based on a cost analysis, cost allocation, preferably to whoever creates the cost pays for it. Is that still correct?
Yes, that is true, Mayor.
And so if we don't bill the person that uses a service, we essentially would be shifting that cost on to other residents that are just paying for someone else's use of a service.
Yes, that is true.
So the attempt is to assign the cost to the person essentially creating a cost, and it's just cost recovery, hopefully through some economy of scale that we're doing a larger service.
Correct.
So if there's no other questions, we'll open it up to the public. If anyone would like to comment on these, would not be, for example, has nothing to do with Los Lomas or any of the private.
That is true. Those are separate and not on this.
This is just on city-operated activities that has a reimbursement, like fire service or something similar.
Yes.
Okay, so I'll open it up to the public. Anyone wishing to speak on this item? Seeing no one come forward, we'll close public comment. And now we could go into any statements, comments you'd like to make or further questions. And we'll, after we exhaust council questions or comments, I would entertain a motion. So let me go ahead and begin with Councilmember Brabeau, because you mentioned you had some more statements you'd like to make.
Yeah, in regards, I guess, since we're doing the fire fee on this piece also, it seems to me, you know, this dilemma between a flat fee versus the 150%, that we could also do a hybrid approach to that and have some minimum flat fee and then a percentage above that, so that a small parcel, does have to pay some minimum amount, because the entire premise of this program is to discourage people from, you know, having the city do their weeds.
Well, let me make sure. I don't know that is true, because we can't add an additional punishment portion of a fee. It's only can be cost reimbursed. So even though we would like to see people take care of their weeds, we are not punishing them. This is a way to recover the cost for a service.
I understand, but I think the point being that the small parcel is any parcel that requires weed abatement by the city is incurring a substantial cost for the city, for the administration of that program, because they require the same amount of double checks by the fire marshal, et cetera. So it is indeed fair. In fact, you could argue that the large parcel is subsidizing the small parcel.
I think you're making a point maybe between a fixed and a variable cost, because by just having to go through a process, there's a certain level of service that has to be provided, and that may be under-allocated to a small parcel. And then there's a portion that might have to do with size. But so I think if we're going to be true to our policy, we'd want to maybe revisit that and make sure the costs are appropriately assigned. And I think that may be, you know, certainly a good point you bring up, that there's a fixed cost per any size parcel just to go through all of this process, because you've got the same notification whether it's 5 acres or 100 acres.
Right. Correct.
So do you have an idea how to approach that, or do you want to ask staff if they've given that some thought?
I would just think that, and I think staff has considered this option, and I don't have a specific amount in my mind, but just would ask staff to come back with a proposal for a hybrid of a base amount per parcel if the city has to abate their weeds, and a percentage amount.
What I'd like to ask staff to do is just take notes at this point. We may have a number of council suggestions, and when we get them all, I'll ask the staff to read it back to us, and we'll see if there's consensus for each one. Like, that was very well stated. We can get a consensus on that, but let's see if there's any other ideas for staff to write down to consider. Go ahead, Councilwoman Fonzie.
Yes, I think the question needs to be asked whether there's quite a number of smaller parcels that are needing to have their weeds whacked by the city. And if they're not, if they're disproportionately the larger parcels, I think we probably should leave it the same. On the other side, if there's more small, maybe they're not paying their fair share.
So similar, yeah. Any other council questions or things for staff to research? Go ahead. I should allow Councilmember Brabeau to finish his thought.
I didn't want to move on to other fees if people had more comments about fire fee.
Is that all the comment on fire fees? Okay, take it away.
Actually, I'd be happy to wait and let you ask your question. I don't want to feel like I'm asking too many here. I read all these fees, and like I said, had a number of questions for the city manager, because it seems like, you know, we have a hell of a lot of different fees, and some of them seem rather expensive. So I scrutinized them with a sharp eye, I guess. But one of them that concerned me about perhaps is not enough is number 17-016, which is regarding EIR. And what struck me is, you know, we just finished last week the review comment period, if you will, for the EIR on Eagle Ranch. And I'm sure likewise when the Walmart EIR went through, there were, you know, a very large number of public comments. which staff then has to review the consultant's response as well as provide some initial, you know, response to the public and log them and et cetera. And we're charging essentially 10% of the EIR cost, I guess, to help cover that cost. And I can just see that in a particular current circumstance, which this would not affect because it's water under the bridge, is, you know, can become very overwhelming for staff. And the amount of time staff can spend on one of these can then be to the detriment of other people who have other projects before the planning and building staff. And so I would think maybe there's some consideration to just in the future looking at that as to whether that or not that particular fee is adequate.
Well, let's have some discussion just on that with staff. And again, I think when folks have looked at this before, there's sometimes a discussion of, well, maybe you should waive or defer fees, which we have deferred fees sometimes, where it's something that is generating a future income flow. So it's a cost-benefit analysis issue, like, okay, is the upfront costs going to be offset with a, you know, future income stream? And so you get into discussions like that. But I agree, if you're going to be consistent, you'd want to at least have it be quantified. What's it cost to do an EIR? Then you make a decision you want to subsidize or not based on some economic factor. But you want to see accurate cost accounting to begin with. So I'd ask the city manager to address that. Are we at full cost recovery for EIRs, for example, or how are those considered individually?
They are set up for full cost recovery. However, all of the fees are set up for an average or typical user. Those outliers on either side, whether it be a very complex thing or a very simple thing, may be undercharged or overcharged. However, you do need to set a fee that's going to get the vast majority of them. A lot of the EIR fees and a lot of the planning fees, the biggest driver of staff time is really not the size of the project or even sometimes the complexity of the project as much as the I'm trying to put this politely, professionalism of the consultant team that is working for the applicant, and how contentious they would like to be, or how many questions or difficulties or how many iterations we have to go through. That is really hard to build into a fee. We have built it into some of those where you'll see, hey, a third plan check, you're going to get charged more. A third inspection, we're going to get charged more. For an EIR, that's a little bit harder to quantify. When we do things that really would capture that for some of those planning fees, such as an EIR where we say, okay, we'll charge the fully allocated hourly rate, we have found that our staff is not very good at tracking their time, and so we're even worse off at recovering fees. I think Councilmember Barbeau is correct. We should look at that. We have a little bit more experience on those EIRs. But that is something that we would have to look at as part of the next fee study. You can't touch that one piece without touching the whole. But it is something that we can put in our notes for the next fee study.
And will you now have better ability to track staffing time, for example, with the new permit processing software we have, where you can allocate costs by job a little more?
I think that certainly the tool will be improved. However, we're not lawyers and accountants, so it's not part of our normal routine to do it all.
Some of you are accountants.
That's it. Some of us are. That's it. So it's more of a human factor than a software factor.
Well, there's also a cost of analysis.
Oh, and absolutely. So, and there is a cost for all of those.
I think
finance department hates those.
Well, I think we're going to leave it in your discretion, but I think there's a council consensus. I think everyone has always come back to, we want to be fair as we can, and we certainly don't want to see some folks subsidizing other folks. I guess you can't have a meanness tax, but it seems like there's a way that there's a certain allocated number of of processes associated, and then if you kind of go over that average number, that there could be an additional fee, just to be fair, that we're not shifting someone who really does it all right the first time, they're in and they're out, they're essentially subsidizing folks that are not doing it right, didn't get good staffing support. So if I think the consensus is to just look at that and where it's cost effective, you know what to do. Go ahead. Councilman Bro, did you have any others before we go
on?
Yeah,
I had two others in the opposite direction then.
Did a question about that?
Just a quick question. This is for staff. I'm wondering if other cities have some means of looking at the EIRs and somehow predicting the complexity or some other measurement. We don't want to be ahead of the pack in terms of fees and drive business away because we're too high. But on the flip side, we don't want to subsidize them ourselves with staff. So just wondered if we could look into that.
Yeah, certainly the consultant does a lot of fee studies for a lot of different cities throughout the state of California. And so he definitely has some ideas, and we can look at that as part of the next fee study.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Also, and regarding fee 170030, native tree removal permit, you know, $368 on a permit to approve removal of a 2 to 23 inch tree, you know, I still find it, you know, absurd that we require any kind of permit to remove a 2-inch tree or a 3-inch tree or 4 or 5-inch tree. And, you know, and that kind of cost, I understand completely the premise that, you know, you're trying to average this out. But it just reminds me that we at some point need to address the reasonableness of our tree policy. And then because, you know, I think that's onerous for those very small items. And I don't know what the heck we're reviewing that takes $368 of staff time.
Let me comment on trees if you're leaving trees before
yeah,
you do.
Leave it.
Yeah, because I think you had to have been there. I've lived through some councils where that was a very important topic, and there may well have been a punishment component. But I think the fact is there was a day, I can remember council meetings where if someone said what you said, there'd be a line here at the door before you know the you shut your mic off, and that's why it is the way it is. And when I came on council many years ago, folks would warn me, don't touch the tree thing, it's too, you know, I don't know that that is the case anymore. And I think it is an area, I think we were wisely reviewing the tree ordinance when it came to like emergency solutions regarding septic systems, for example. We came to some very reasonable approaches because I think we've kind of reached a new equilibrium and balance in our community. We think things through. And we apply science, as one person has noted, whether it's cost-benefit analysis, accounting, or engineering. And there may be, I think if we, I would suggest we think that through at strategic planning in general. I think in years past, staff were a little nervous to touch issues that have been very controversial in the city years ago. Well, it's different now, and maybe we can look at some of those areas.
And then I would, you know, I did bring this subject up in strategic planning and seemed to get a receptive audience that this is an example of something that over time has needed to be looked at. And so, I mean, I would like to, so I bring it up again just to remind us that we shouldn't wait another year for another strategic planning session. It's something that at some point we should address because our, not just the fee dollar amounts, but what we charge fees for should be reasonable because our staff, you know, we have a very limited staff. We have a very lean staff in this city and a very good staff. But to have them spend time on things of that degree, I think detracts from basically their ability to do the best job possible for the city. And I would remind you, I was actually on the city council in 1987 and 1988 when the tree ordinance was first adopted. And
you remember.
So I am indeed familiar with some of the emotion attached to it for some people. But we should not be you know, afraid to review things and make changes as we deem proper. The other issue is sort of a pet peeve is the sign, express sign permit, number 41. And I won't dwell on it because the council has, you know, wisely kept the fee low, but again, it's on a temporary basis, and the fee is quite large for you know, what would be, it's called an express sign permit, and even a very, very small sign of no magnitude has a would, if the council's waiver, when it expires, if not extended, would be $478. And, it just seems very excessive to me for very small signs. We should have, like we do on some of the other fees, where we have a minor, you know, one fee for minor or something, and a higher fee for major. We should have the same thing for signs and have a lower fee for small signs.
Well, two things I would comment on that, and of course, I think I would agree with you, but first on some of the rules, like dealing with trees, we are what is called, our code enforcement is complaint driven. So there may have been a day where you have something on the books that you cut down a 2-inch tree, you're going to be in trouble. And it might have been that there used to be people keeping an eye on that more. I haven't heard anyone bring that to the city's attention in a lot of years. So in some ways, there's a way that that is mitigated with a change in attitude in the community. And then I think on the signs, again, I think we have consistently said we want to do cost recovery. So if it's a cost, a true cost, then let's recover it. And if it's too high of a cost based on cost recovery, then let's don't. And then I think the reason we've waived some is we've looked at it as part of economic stimulus that, you know, that may be a good thing to just have it on the books and the council reevaluates that and say, no, we're going to continue our economic incentive of these things. We're going to consciously say we're doing it below cost, but at least we're clear in doing that. So, but I think it's whatever the council decides. So you got one out of five votes. You get two more, you're done.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to raise those issues.
Yeah, they are good. So how would you like to proceed with those issues you've raised?
Well, I would just want to remind everybody, I think at some point we do need to address the extremities. In other words, just those narrow pieces of the tree ordinance that seem a little bit excessive. And then on the sign thing, the council has, you know, lowered the fee for now, so neither of those, you know, has to be addressed immediately and don't really affect the vote this evening.
Well, I think you brought up a good point, and what we've done as a council is we've always kind of done a forced choice prioritization. Like you said, they're kind of minor things, and that's the point. Do you want to take time to kind of revisit that if it's not a current issue as opposed to what we've asked staff to already do? So I think that's really up to you. I think any time you want to put something on an agenda, you get a consensus, yeah, it'll be on the agenda. So I think just...
Okay, well, I would ask each council member to think about that, and we can address it another time. I would add, though, that in one of our more recent sessions where we looked at, you know, staff workloads, it was pointed out that I think the number of administrative use permits we did on tree removals, and it represented a substantial number of the administrative use permits they did. And therefore, it goes back to that point of trying to free up staff's time to focus on the things we really want them to focus on.
Well, let me put it back on the city manager, because I distinctly remember strategic planning. We've a couple of times said, city manager, look for those opportunities of things we can get off the books to free up staff time. And if you either want to do that because you think it's cost effective, or you don't because you're just too darn busy doing other things. But I think you've heard the council, and I've heard from a number of individuals publicly that there is some interest. If there's some on the books that really doesn't need to be there anymore for whatever reason, simplification, I'm hearing that. So I would kind of leave it with the city manager, unless a council member puts it on the agenda. Bring it to us, and we will consider.
We will be bringing that to you at your next meeting.
Now, that is fast. Is that fast enough for you?
We won't be bringing...
That's plenty fast.
We will not be bringing the tree ordinance to you at your next meeting, but we will be bringing you a list of council policy items for you to consider whether or not you want to adjust or change some of those things. The tree ordinance is on that list, and so certainly I expect it to be a lively discussion 2 weeks from now.
I would call that anticipating our demands. So very good. Councilwoman Moreno, you had a comment or question.
We first went through this, I think it was in 2014, and I think like you did this time around, we all went through it with a pretty fine point and asking those questions. And unfortunately, so much of the answer is that there's so little within our control. So much of this is dictated by agencies outside of us that we have to do when it comes to many of these. And the nice thing was in 2014, we actually did have a reduction in some of our fees. We found out that, you know, we could do less here. It was taking less time. We were able to reduce some. So that was good news. But, you know, by far, most of it is more requirements that come down, and it ends up costing us more. And this is the result of that. And so glad to hear the trees are coming back. Well, you know what I mean by that. And I think... what we'll be looking at is, you know, do you spend 100 hours now to save an hour a year? Well, right. No, you don't do that. But do you save 100 hours now to spend, you know, to save 50 a year? Well, yes. And those are extreme examples, but I think those are some of the things we'll talk about, because I think it's important to look at what we're doing and where do we not need to keep doing what we're doing, because it's so often that doesn't happen in government. And I love that we have a staff that's willing to look at that, and we agreed at strategic planning that we want to look in that direction of how can we be leaner without expecting you to do more with less. How can you be doing less, because it doesn't have to be done? And I know that might take some creativity or kind of changing the way we think about things. The only other small little thing I was looking at is the postage. I think we had talked about this a couple years ago, and I can't remember that anything came from it, but let me get back to that page. Hold on one moment. 17143, so like mailing of notices, is that based on staff time? Is that based on postage?
That is based on staff time. The fee is for like 0 to 50 notices, it'll be $80 plus the actual cost of postage or other mailing fees. So the $80 is the cost for us to run the label, set everything up, get everything out and all of that, and then the postage is tacked on top of that.
Okay, I'm thinking we should, and on the one above, we should change that to 1 to 50. I mean, we don't charge somebody if they don't need any, right?
This is true.
Okay,
thank you.
So, yeah, if we could just make that change.
That's a clerical change that we can make.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Any other council questions on this item? So, go ahead.
Just a general comment, and going back to what Ms. Moreno said and Mr. Burbeau, I think there are some ways that we could change the way we do business. And the one that comes to mind that I'd like to see handled at some point in time, not urgent, is the weed abatement scheduling and the way that we send out the notices. I think it might actually be cheaper if we were to contract that out. And if we were to hire someone who's willing to go and inspect those parcels and have the training, is maybe something we'll have to talk with the fire chief. It may be more complex than I believe, but drives by and puts out the notices, says, I'll fight the battles, I'll put up this, I'll send this out, but it might be cheaper to have it farmed out. And so I'd like to have that looked at some point in time.
Other council questions? Well, we're going to, I don't believe we've gone to the public yet on this. Did we do that? It's been so long already, I've forgotten. Well, since we've talked so much, I do want to give a second bite to any member of the public wishing to comment on anything they've heard before we go. That would be you, the one member in the public, because we will be voting on this very soon. So no other public comment. We'll close my second public comment opportunity, bring it back to council. And I think, as we've often said, with most things that we are doing are things that are required by other agencies. And so that does make it tough for us sometimes. I do think our staff does a better job of enforcing and interpreting some of these areas than, for example, other agencies. Like, I'm glad our staff is managing septic systems, for example, as opposed to the Regional Water Quality Control Board, because we know our staff is going to really look at, you know, the idiosyncrasies and uniqueness of our community, and more so. So I would entertain a motion on this item if we have no further deliberation.
I make a motion that we accept staff's recommendation to adopt draft resolution amending a schedule of fees and charges for city services.
And is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay. And I know I had a few side notes. I think we kind of got that interpreted into you. Does staff clear what the direction would be from our motion and discussion? What you would be doing, if anything different?
I believe so, Mayor. I just wanted to have one clarification on the weed abatement with Councilwoman Fonzie, Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie. Your discussion was based on the size of the lots, and I'm not sure I understood if there's lots of small or mixture.
What I was asking for is some idea whether more small lots are offenders or more large lots are offenders, because I think it makes a difference on how we approach this. If more small lots are offenders, they're basically being subsidized, as Mr. Burbeau said, by the larger lots. And if that's not the case, if it's the reverse, then we may want to stick with our current policy or a hybrid thereof.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm looking for information.
Thank you.
And are we looking at continuing this year with feedback coming for the next cycle of a little more analysis? Is that what we're hearing? Is that your understanding? Okay. And is that clear enough for you to?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. I'll ask for a roll call, please.
Councilmember Burbeau?
Yes.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
And Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. The item B2, amendments to city facility rental fee schedule, is an item I will need to step down on, and I do not need to leave the room. I can participate as a member of the public. And the reason is because, again, being the proprietor, owner of Portola Inn, which is a boutique event center, we provide services at facilities. And so the fact that there are other facilities, though many would not consider us in competition, it's a technical competition, such as this building, the community center, the pavilion. So I will be stepping down on those items and turn it over to Councilwoman Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie to take item B2.
And I should add to that explanation that the reason you're going to be able to stay in the room is to address the item as it might affect your personal interests, personal
yes.
business interests.
And just as an example, a contrast, me and Councilman Sturdivant, you know, he has to step down on a PG&E issue because he's an employee, and but he wouldn't necessarily have a personal impact from the discussion, so he's actually required to leave the room.
Can't hear you.
Go ahead and state whatever needs to be stated on the contrast, and then I'm going to get out of here.
Well, that item is yet to come up. I believe that's on the successor agency. On the consent item, the reason that neither you nor Councilmember Sturdivant had to leave the room was because under the rules for the FPPC, if it's a consent item, you declare the conflict, you abstain, but you do not need to leave the room. And as for the item on the successor agency that Councilmember Sturdivant will have a conflict on, that is dealing with the grant of an easement for PG&E, which is his employer. And he could stay in the room if there was some personal interest involved, but if there's not, then he would need to leave the room. So that's the distinction.
Very good. We'll move on to amendments to city facility rental fee schedule, item B2. Before we start, is there any ex parte? Seeing none, was this going to be you again, Jerry?
Yes, it is. Thank you very much, Mayor, Pro Tem Fonzie and Council. So very similar to the last item that we had, just a little bit brief information. Again, this is a CPI adjustment at the 2.49 CPI increase. This was last adjusted last May at this time, 2016. I believe the only thing that we added were some Friday evening rental nights for this facility that hadn't previously been available, so that becomes available for those who are interested in renting that. Other than that, it's just a pretty straightforward adjustment, and with that, I would conclude my staff report and entertain any questions.
Thank you. Brief is good. We like that. Just I have one question. If no one else does, let me go down from end to end. No? That most facilities that operate and provide space for rentals usually do this for profit. Basically, we're operating as a nonprofit, so we don't need to be competitive with other wedding venue providers or other facilities. What I'm trying to get at is the CPI actually the best measurement? Are we keeping track? Are we on track with the costs of actually providing services like this?
That's an excellent point. We do try to maintain kind of ideas of what the market is comfortable with. We want to provide our community with the opportunity to rent the facilities as needed. But at the same time, there is a market factor that we do kind of keep an eye on. And yes, you're right. Thank you.
So we feel that we are in line basically based on studies or other data with other facilities that provide wedding venues, for instance?
I could probably address that a little bit better. For the pavilion and the Colony Park Community Center, we are a bargain and a half. We are considerably under the market for a lot of the other venues. The market has shifted in numerous years as brides are looking more for an experience type wedding. Wineries and barns and other things have become more popular rather than venues like the pavilion. The city does heavily subsidize the pavilion for most rentals and does for brides to some extent. At the level of the CPI, we're still competitive enough for a bride that is looking for a facility like the pavilion that this is, you know, that we're priced in the right spot. The City Hall Chambers is a little bit different. We are priced quite a bit higher. It is more of an experience-type destination. It's a small venue, certainly has some constraints. Not everybody wants a council dais in the middle of their wedding, but that is priced more based on the market. The pavilion's priced more based on a asset for the community to enjoy.
Very good. Thank you. Any questions, Ms. Moreno first, and then Mr. Bourbeau?
Yes, it seems like the City Hall rentals, so the pavilion rentals, everything went up by the CPI. The Colony Park did not, and, you know, I get that that may be because it's, you know, kids and we're trying to stay reasonable there for our community, but maybe you could answer that. And the other would be the City Hall rentals did not seem to increase with the CPI.
I believe that we had already published some information in the Recreation Center for the Colony Park Community Center, and we didn't want to change the fees after we had already published those. So we will continue to keep an eye on those. They seem pretty fairly priced, and since it is based on, like you say, family and recreation and that type of thing, we wanted to make sure it stayed as affordable as possible. And as far as this building goes, I have to take a look at that real quick. I believe those were also included in the recreation guide, which is why they didn't increase this time.
And the recreation guide goes through summer, or?
Not sure about that. I believe so.
I believe it is through the summer months.
So I'm curious, with the City Hall rentals, would it maybe be appropriate to do the CPI, and could it, you know, increase, you know, come September 1 or October 1, whatever that date might be? It seems, you know, that we're for a two-month period. we have this published, yes, but then we're, you know, taking a 12-month hit.
Certainly you could do that. You can say, hey, for those, we would like to see those go up by the CPI effective and do a date certain. September 1 seems like a reasonable date, and then that would allow us to get it in the next recreation guy.
Okay. Mr. Barreau?
Yes, thank you. You mentioned that the pavilion is a deal and a half. So it got me wondering. I look here, and I see we do charge a substantially, well, you know, fairly reasonably substantially more for non-residents and or commercial purposes, which is logical to me. I'm not sure how we arrived at that particular difference. And if it's a deal and a half, to quote you, whether or not, you know, we should possibly be charging more for non-residents, even more than we're already charging.
I think that the pavilion fees are a blend. A lot of the costs of the pavilion are a fixed cost. So if you can recover part of your fixed cost by renting it out to a non-resident, you're doing better than if you weren't renting it out at all. So for the non-resident, we definitely cover all of our variable costs, meaning our staff time, our cost to open the pavilion, the water and electricity that's used, and all of those. But for our non-residents, we cover a bigger portion of that fixed cost. What we want to do is we would like to get as much of that fixed cost rented, fixed cost covered as much as possible. So you want to make sure that the building is rented. Mm-hmm. So it's a balancing act. If you go too high, you're not going to rent it. If you go too low, you're not recovering enough cost. So this is about the balancing point that we have found to hit that market.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Very good. Let's go ahead and open it to the public. Is there anyone in the public that would like to speak on this item?
Well, it's hard to resist. One of my favorite topics. And one, I think, as a member of the Tourism Business Improvement District Board and as an owner of a boutique event center, I don't think anyone in the private sector considers themselves in competition with the city. It's just a different world. I think folks, you know, like the ambiance of a private setting where it's not open to the public, where, you know, anyone may come and go. The fact is you are extremely low. And I think it's not such a question of the facility. I think it's really a question of marketing. And I think now that you do have Terry Banish and a marketing promotions on board, the potential of doing just more business because of marketing. I know recently the pavilion had a paid membership with Wedding Wire, which is something we've been involved with, and that's been a substantial increase in our business. I think things like that are a potential for the pavilion, certainly. And it's full of water now. The beauty of having you've got a policy of full cost recovery. The beauty is that you can waive those fees where the city trades with almost any community organization or even a private sector venture like a car show if there's some economic purpose for the city. So it essentially would just raise the value of what you're donating. Instead of donating a $1,000 facility, or donating a $2,000 facility or something. And so I don't know that there's any discouragement to working with potential businesses you might do business with. And I think you still have it's nice to have a low-cost alternative for residents, but I do think it's something to consider closer to full cost recovery for out-of-area private sector activities, and you're still going to be competitive. And where you would make up for that potential reduction because of you know, when you look at the economics of what a cost curve looks like, there's the elasticity and inelasticity. You know, you could raise it $500 and it wouldn't make a difference because it's basically so low, it's not really impacting your price factor. And I think you could make that up with looking at the marketing potential. So that's just a thought on that. I would like to see the city do more investing in some of the resources it has because it could be more useful and competitive. And so that's something to think about. And I think Patty out at the pavilion would have ideas on that, and so would Terry Banish down the road someday. But thank you for filling up the lake with water.
Thank you. And because we're on the radio, would you mind stating your name for the record?
Tom O'Malley, proprietor of Portola Inn.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and close public comment and bring it back for a motion or discussion.
I just had one additional question for the city manager, and that is, do you know offhand what the, I'll call it occupancy rate, or how often the pavilion is rented on a full-day basis on Saturdays?
Certainly not at the level that we've seen in the past because of some of the water and lake issues. It is starting to get booked more, but it is certainly not every Saturday. That would be a lovely goal to try and get there. Well, we can look at it again, and I can get you those numbers sometime in the future.
Just curious. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Moreno?
I'd be willing to make the motion, but I'm wondering if my colleagues would consider the city hall rentals that we do set a date and increase that by CPI. The Colony Park, I can go either way. I know that we do, you know, as a community, we have decided that subsidizing, you know, the kids' activities is important. And so I can go either way on the CPI for that right now.
I'd like to see Colony Park left as is and the City Hall due in September. Yes, I agree with that.
So I can do that. Consensus on that?
Yes, I agree with that as well. Okay. Is that clear to staff what was stated?
So that would be to increase the City Hall rental cost by the CPI of 2.49% effective September 1st, 2017. Is that correct?
Or whatever date you determine is for the next rec guide. So if something in the current rec guide goes through, you know, September 8th, then, you know, make it September 9th, whatever that date would be.
Okay. Thank you.
And Colony and the youth center?
And leave the youth center as is.
Basically as is.
Okay, no, so CPI. The only thing that would change would be the City Hall rental fees.
Yes.
Correct.
Got so I would make that motion.
Do I have a second? Motion by Ms. Moreno, second by Mr. Sturdivant. Roll call vote, please.
Okay. Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Bourbeau?
Yes.
And Mayor Pro Tem Fonsi?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes.
Thank you.
I always hate going out in the audience and you come back and you watch Mayor Pro Tem Fonsi run the meeting so much quicker. What? Anyway, let's move on to the next item, which is council announcements and reports. And since it is a fairly short meeting and maybe not a lot beyond, I will merge everything together. Council announcements, reports, committee reports, anything you have to say, we will go ahead and I'll just go from my right to my left, and then we will be adjourning to another meeting.
No report.
Go ahead.
No report.
Thank you. I feel like I'm in an odd place to make this recommendation or this question, but I would like to see something come before the council or be put on our agenda for a proclamation or a resolution to honor Mike Fredericks and Leonard for the work that they did on the Shadack property. They were letting this get away from us. I think it was a very important thing in a community service. I'd like to see something happen with that if that is in agreement with the other council members.
I think that's by consensus. We will do a commendation for Leonard and Michael Fredericks and go ahead and put that together.
Thank you. And just to let you know, I did serve on the Air Pollution Control District this last week and a very feisty meeting. Things are coming to a head. Watch the newspapers that apparently state parks and the Air Pollution Control District are not in agreement on how to abate the dust that comes from the off-road vehicles. And it's heading towards a lawsuit. It's been filed by people who are living on the Napomo Mesa that are feeling health effects. And so I'll keep you posted on that as the lawsuits go forward, but they're not happy with the abatement, we'll put it that way. And also attended a LAFCO meeting, and they went ahead with the ballot measure that's coming forward for the Estrella Creston El Pomar Water District. So that'll be going to a vote of the landowners. It is by opt-in only, so I don't feel that there will be any controversy regarding it, but just so that you know. A design review is coming up this Thursday. It'll be, tomorrow. Okay.
Wednesday.
It's on Wednesday. Gosh, I have too many meetings. I'm sorry. And we'll be talking about several rather interesting items. Let me get this for you. It will be design review of the El Camino Real Annex Hotel. No, that was last time. Excuse me. I'll let you go ahead, Mayor. Let me get my thoughts together. I'm not as organized as I ought to be.
Well, there are a lot of meetings going on. We'll come back to you. I'm going to go on down to Councilwoman Moreno.
Let's see. We've had three Finance Committee meetings, and our next one is a week from tomorrow on June 7th at 3:30. And Director Rangel, will we be going over the general fund at this point?
I believe the next meeting may be the May 31st meeting.
Is it May 31st?
And that will be...
Oh, good. That's on my calendar. Okay. May 31st, then June 7th.
Yes. Okay. And May 31st will be over the operational budgets.
Operational budgets. Okay. Wonderful. Those are both at 3:30 in the afternoon downstairs, open to the public. So please, if that's something you are interested in, please come by for those meetings. I'll be attending EDC tomorrow. And then you said community reports together with that?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to thank the Lighthouse Committee and actually several members of our both fire and PD that were at the pavilion last night for the reality tour. Extremely well attended. I don't have the numbers. I want to say between parents and children, I would say probably close to 80 or 90 together. And the reality tour is something where they Lighthouse, it's the awareness, prevention, education, and intervention when it comes to drug use amongst our youth. Mm-hmm. And so the reality tour, we have like Michelle from PD talking about today's drugs, and I mean it's amazing how things change. So the parents and kids together are aware of what's out there. They have an actual kind of drama on, what can happen in an overdose and how that affects the family, and had an interview with a local parent who has lost a son to this horrible situation to drugs. And just very extremely impactful, I think, on the both the parents and the kids there. And I want to thank the Lighthouse Committee for all the work they did putting that together. And thank you to Commander Allen and Michelle, Mike Stornetta, and others who participated and really helped to make this just a very important and helpful event for our community.
Thank you. Go ahead, Councilmember.
Yes. Last week I attended a Homeless Services Oversight Council planning sessions, and nothing really to report from that. And then in terms of just council notes, regrettably, not regrettably that I committed to this, but over a year ago when I committed to being the incoming Rotary Club president, I signed on to attend the International Convention, which takes place in Atlanta, and I will be in Atlanta during our next council meeting. So regretfully, I will not be at the next council meeting.
We'll try to do something really exciting.
So you'll be done a lot faster. Yeah. Point taken.
So no questions that night. Did you also attend the IWMA board meeting on my behalf?
Yes, I did, and the IWMA board, I didn't have to say anything. You had made it well known. You were willing to continue to serve, and the IWMA board did select Merrill Mallet to continue to serve as vice president of the IWMA.
So, thank you. And thank you for helping cover that. And we'll back to Councilman Fonzie.
Thank you for your forbearance. The development review did review a home to suites by Hilton that's coming in the area of the annex. And so the plans are out there if you'd like to take a look at them. Interesting concept of those who would be doing business in the area or visiting for an extended length of time. This would be a good transitional housing, not just a hotel. And our design review project will be covering two items, one that I would particularly like to hear from other council members if they have concerns or thoughts about it, and the one that I'm thinking about is at the corner of El Camino and Morro Road. It's an empty lot next to Rabobank. And they're proposing to put the building towards the back and have the parking towards the front, and some issues about driveways going in and out near the corner. And also the appearance is rather unusual, I feel, for a gateway feature. So if you get a chance, you might want to come to the design review committee meeting, or I have the plans here if you'd like to stop before you head out the door. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, before we go on, I would address this as a city attorney. If council used great forbearance, would this be an appropriate time to offer brief comments to Councilman Fonzi regarding this item that's on the design review committee agenda?
That's a good question. I think that, first of all, that's not on the agenda to give her those comments. And the design review committee is, I think its purpose is to hear from the public and staff with respect to whatever the issue might be. And since that's something that's happening in the future, I'm not quite sure if, you know, for you to be giving comments at this time, it might be premature.
Well, I'm just comparing to the fact that, like, we have a number of committee assignments. Sometimes if a council member is going and asks for feedback, they would just like maybe even questions that they might be going through that process with other members, that it might be appropriate. But I'll trust your decision on that.
Yeah, I think the better course of action would be to allow the committee to proceed through its process independently, if you will. Now, it's how many committee members, how many council members sit on the committee? Two, right. A council member can attend that committee. The problem is, under the Brown Act, you can't say anything. So you're just an observer.
Yeah, so that's why I think this would be the appropriate time to offer a comment, since it's a public process, because you really couldn't at that time. It's a public forum already noticed to give feedback regarding things that are on the agenda, which would include design review committee is an item on the agenda, and their agenda is published ahead of time, so it would not seem unreasonable to offer input on something that's on the agenda as a council report and the agenda has already been published publicly.
No, that's all true what you just said. But the point is that you've got a committee of two council members. For those who are not committee members to be giving input to the two committee members, it's starting to create kind of...
Let me rephrase. Would this be a good time for council members to ask questions that might be brought up at the design review committee?
To ask questions of Councilmember Fonzi?
No, or? To just simply, well, these would be a question to consider perhaps at your upcoming hearing.
Yeah, I think that would be fine, as long as you don't express opinions or try to provide direction.
Okay, so I just want to get that clarified. So just in case any council member would have a question that might want to be considered by the council members, it would be all right for them to ask those questions tonight, since you can't go to the public meeting and open your mouth. This would be the chance, if you had a question that should be considered by the committee, made up of two council members, two planning commissioners, and one person at large, this would be the time to ask those questions. And so we would not expect you to respond, but they would be things to consider. So with that, I'll just ask, does anybody have questions they'd like to see considered by the Design Review Committee regarding this project that Councilman Fonzi brought up? Looking to my left, to my right. Well, I happen to have a question or two. And when this lot has been looked at in the past, there was a lot of concern by Caltrans, I believe, for egress, ingress. I'm actually surprised that it's an option that two-way traffic is considered right on that. I would call it on the Highway 41 side, where I thought that had been ruled out in the past. So I just assume you'll be going through the issues with city engineer, and Caltrans must have an opinion, and I don't know about safety issues, or it just seems like there may well be some safety issues on that spot. I think in the past, I thought it was a council directive that we not have parking towards the street. The parking was behind the building, and I just thought that that was something that had already been reviewed on the downtown area, but I'm sure you will be reviewing that. But that'd be nice to make sure we're not changing a precedent or having any impact. I saw the design of the building, and I thought it might not be in compliance with the design that had been looked at for the downtown. When we have had reviews of the appearance, we had some discussion at council meetings, I know, and that there was kind of a range of look that seemed to fit the historic downtown. And I would just, I'm always concerned about setting precedent if we're really deterring from what has been consistently done in the past. I assume you'll have a good reason for doing it anyway. So those would be just the question areas I would have.
Thank you. I can see Brian rolling his eyes. So I'm wondering if there are anybody would like to see the packet. It'll be here if you want to take a look at it after the meeting. Would that be acceptable? I can see we're getting into some muddy areas here.
Yeah, they can certainly look at it. I think I'm being told by the city manager it's on the website, and other council members can review it.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other reports? I will waive. Councilwoman Moreno.
Thank you. I had forgot to say last Thursday, I think it was Thursday, yes, all the days start running together, we had State of the North County that the chambers, the Paso, Atascadero Chamber, hosted up at the Spring Hill Suites. Rochelle spoke, got quite the ovation. Atascadero is just a really good place to do business. She really laid out there well how we've reduced barriers, how it is the really, when you look overall at the county, the least expensive place to do business and really one of the most welcoming. And so great job on that. We got a lot of positive feedback. I know Charles and I were both at the mixer, and I had people saying to me how much they really liked hearing all that information. And so thank you for that. And thanks to our chambers for putting all that together.
That was very good. I could say one thing that was nice about this week is I have heard from the public really several times. It was really all about kind of a random appreciation of staff. I'm stuck in physical therapy. I'm on, and somebody comes up and starts talking. You know, you're thinking, okay, this. I hope this is good because I'm trapped. But it was a good thing. She, this lady who just went on and on commending the police department. She had a home invasion, a single woman at home. Someone actually broke into the house. She called the police. She felt was a very quick response. They were very thorough and reassuring, and they just meant a lot to her. And she was wanting to make sure I heard about it. And I wanted to pass that on to the police chief. I told her, send me an email. I want to pass it on. But again, you realize how important your everyday job is to some folks when they're in need. And, of course, we also got an email about folks not only just thankful for the road work being done, but just special compliments to our contractor, Burke Construction, and, again, with city staff, city engineer. I think people really are appreciating the work that's going forward on this tax initiative. We're really getting some community neighborhood roads repaired and doing a good job cost effectively. And, you know, people are really appreciating that. So thank you, staff, on those items. Any other last comments, city or staff? We are now going to adjourn from our city council meeting and recess, I believe, to our successor agency meeting. And I will go ahead and call the successor agency session to order. We already reported on the closed session item that occurred during that, and we'll go ahead with a roll call for the successor agency.
Councilmember Burbo?
Here.
Councilmember Moreno?
Here.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Here.
Mayor O'Malley?
Here.
All present.
Excuse me, Mayor. Since I did report on that item, but it was during the council meeting, let me just say that now that there was no reportable action in connection with the successor agency closed session tonight.
Thank you for the record. First item on the agenda is the consent calendar. And any member of the public wishing to comment on that? Seeing none, we'll bring it to the council for action.
Move approval of the consent calendar.
Second.
I have a motion by Councilman Moreno, seconded by Councilman Sturtevant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Councilmember Burbo?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. Now we have community forum, an opportunity for any member of the community to speak on any issue under the board's jurisdiction that is not on the agenda. Seeing no one in the public coming forward, we'll close the community forum. We have no public hearings, and we begin with a management report on C1. And Councilman Sturtevant, a comment?
Yes, comment. I work for Pacific Gas and Electric Company, so this is a conflict of interest for me, so I will be stepping down and leaving the room.
Thank you.
Are you coming back?
Mayor, very quickly before Councilmember Sturtevant leaves. I see my clerk over there shrugging. Was that because we didn't approve the agenda? Are we okay?
Yeah, we're fine.
Okay. There we go.
Oh, we missed one. Sorry. Shall we continue on? Whatever yes. You would like, Ms. City Clerk, because you've never led us astray yet.
No, you're okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll go on with the management report. Is that the city manager?
That will be me. It's going to be very short and sweet. This is the other part of the PG&E easement that the city council approved as part of their consent agenda. We need to underground a PG&E pole that is right near the landing of where the Centennial Bridge will be. As part of that undergrounding, we need to grant PG&E an easement. Part of that easement is on what I would call the Creekside building parcel, and that is owned by the successor agency, so we would need the successor agency to grant that easement to PG&E to be able to underground the utilities there. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I don't see any questions, except for Councilmember Prevost, of course.
You didn't think you'd get off
please.
That easy, did you?
Go ahead.
It just occurred to me, you know, this being the successor agency, there's a substantial cost to doing this, as I understand it, doing the undergrounding. I mean, not necessarily to providing the easement, but on doing the undergrounding.
Yes, that cost will be borne by the city as part of the Centennial Bridge project, so the successor agency will not be paying for the undergrounding, they will just be granting the easement.
Okay, because I was hoping a successor agency would pay for it. But the money we're using for the pole project, though, was ultimately was part of the redevelopment agency, wasn't it?
Correct.
Okay.
These are the proceeds from the 2010 redevelopment bonds.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. Any other council questions? Seeing none, I'd entertain a motion. I'll move approval of staff's recommendation. Is there a second?
Second.
I have a motion by Mayor O'Malley, seconded by Councilwoman Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Councilmember Burbo?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We'll welcome back Councilman Sturtevant to the public process. And any board announcements or reports? None from Councilmember Burbo, I see. Anyone else? No? Well, with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.